Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Given that it's coming to the end of December, we're going to do something different again this week in that we're going to look ahead into 2023 and what might lie in store for each of the sectors. Shout out to our supporter Grassland Agro for helping us to make this show happen. Later in the show, we'll hear a chat Adam had with Sean McMahon from Grassland Agro on looking ahead into 2023. Also, as normal, to start, I have quick fire questions for Adam, Darren and Aidan. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk at farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, first quick fire for you. Let me read it out here to make sure I get it right. Will that quality assurance requirement stay in the sucker scheme, or is there a chance it will be removed before it is launched? It will be some pain when just selling weedlings in the mart. Adam, just maybe give us the context of what scheme this farmer is talking about and a bit of background to this.
Yeah, Jack, so the context here is that on the new suckler scheme, the suckler cow efficiency program, the SCEP we'll call it, that's the replacement for BDGP. There's a requirement in there that farmers have to be a participant in the SDAS, the Board Beef Quality Assurance Scheme, prior to entry to that new program. And we expect that to be opened in March 2023. So that's only a very short period of time away. The reasoning behind that is that the Department of Agriculture want to get a really good handle on the carbon footprint of each farm in the country. And this, they see this as a route to doing this, and that the board be a sort of carbon navigator or carbon footprint. The new one that they're developing will be a sort of a bulletproof one that if everybody goes into SCEP or the suckler farmers into SCEP, they'll have a really good handle then on that sort of carbon element of the farm. So that's the reasoning behind looking for farmers to go in there into that SDAS program prior to joining. I don't think, Jack, maybe that they've enough people on the ground even to get, because I think there's 55,000 farmers in SDAS. I think maybe about 10 or 15% of those are suckler or weaning guys. So there's a huge proportion of beef farmers, obviously, and finishers in it, but the weaning guys aren't. I think you could see maybe an extension on that you'll have so many months to still get into SDAS, we'll say post application day. But that doesn't mean at the moment, I'd say to farmers, look about getting into it. There's the application forms on the website there, boardbeer.ie. Very simple, just put in your herd number, sign it, take a picture of it, bang it off on an email, and you'll have a person, it'll be on the phone to you then to do the visit.
Thanks, Adam. Back to you in a minute. Darren, two quick fires for you. Let me just get them, read them out here now first to make sure I am right. First one, the last 2 years have seen sheep prices dip in mid-January. What are the odds of this happening again? Simple one, Darren, to start with.
Yeah, it's not the most simple or straightforward. I'd be more confident to Galway having a better year than Tipperary next year, Jack. We'll look at that lamb price one.
You didn't do great at the weekend, Darren.
No, we're sure. Look, we'll see. Oh, here, we're
running back.
I think on the on that, Jack, it's very hard to know, because the factories will tell you this. Where that comes from is that, say, there's a high level of bills or credit card bills build up, and that it's, say, the sales are all at the poor at the end of January. But in actual fact, the last 2 years, it's just been this dip in the middle of the month, and prices have improved again. And I think where it comes from is a carryover of sheep. The sheep kill is generally low the first week back, and then it sort of ramps up, and it just puts a bit of pressure on it, and then when that glut of lambs passes through the system, it sort of frees itself up a bit So I wouldn't be surprised if you've seen something like that. The only caveat to that this year is that with the way concentrate prices are, you just don't know whether there'll be a big push of lambs or whether there's as much feeding going on. So okay, it's a harder one just to call.
We might come to that later in the show in terms of where we're looking forward, Darren. Second question for you. Are they, I presume it's the department he's talking about, are they opening the soil sampling programme again? Talk to me about that, Darren.
Yeah, we covered this, I think, at the start of October. We asked the department what was the story. And at the time, it was asked in two questions. Was everybody sampled, say, from the previous programme, and were they going to open it again? At the time, they said there was, I think, 500 or 600 people to sample. I think a good few of those have been sampled since, Jack. And I think there is going to be an opening, I'd say, anytime soon. Now, it's getting questionable, Jack. We're going to run into the same issue as we had last year, in that we're pushing it closer to the, say, opening period for spreading slurry in that. But the department have said that they were looking at the tendering process in October, and they were hoping to open it in the following weeks. But we're still waiting and seeing that.
Okay, one to watch. Thanks for that, Darren. Back to you in a minute. Aidan, two quick fires for you. Is there any way of reducing the amount of milk replacer calves need? It has gone very expensive. Will prices hold or drop back? So there's a couple of questions in that, Aidan. First of all, the amount of milk replacer to calves, and then on the price job.
Yeah, so Jack, I mean, look, there's a big variation how much milk replacer is being fed to calves in general. So if you go by the recommendations in the bag, it's down as low as 500 grams per calf per day, depending on the supplier and who you're getting it off. And then more of them are recommending, you know, up to a kilogram of powder per day. And some of the Travis figures are suggesting for, you know, high gain in particularly, I suppose, in dairy heifer calves feeding up to a kilogram or even over a kilogram is required. But I mean, other farmers then are getting on very well of feeding 600, 700 grams of powder per day. So it's all very, you know, relative, I suppose, in terms of the system you're in and what the calves require. I know some of the studies in Chagas Grange, Nicky Byrne, the researcher on the beef side of stuff in Grange, is looking into feeding, you know, he was feeding dairy bred bull calves. And he found that the actual calves that are fed the lower amount of milk replacer perform better overall in that first year. So feeding an awful lot of milk replacer is a poor use of funds. And in terms of whether milk replacer is coming down in price, yes, it's coming down on a daily basis, Jack. So I'd hold off and buy a milk replacer as long as possible. I'm writing about it actually, or, you know, these weeks, hold off as long as possible. And if you're looking to feed it next spring, because it's going to be a lot less than the peak that it came at during the summer.
Absolutely. On the back of global commodity prices falling. Excellent. Thanks for that. And one other quick fire for you. A neighbour told me he got a text saying urea was down to 850 euros a tonne. Is that true, or should I buy, or will it go down more?
Easy one for you. Yeah. I haven't seen much urea at 850. You know, 950 is closer to what I've seen it at now in the last few weeks, but the market isn't hot at the moment, Jack. I'd say there's not much demand for fertilizer currently, because a lot of farmers who are looking to buy fertilizer have it bought already. You know, it's kind of a twilight period between, you know, the main demand coming in spring when farmers want to have it and spread it, and I suppose what merchants would have bought it at now is usually in many cases higher than 850, so they won't sell it for the 850 mark, even if that's what it's currently available at. But look, I mean, where that's probably coming from is you know, commodity prices for gas, which is the main ingredient in making fertilizer, has fallen an awful lot over where it's peaked during the summer and early autumn. So yes, you know, the outlook is probably a lot better than it was even 6 weeks ago, but we're probably not there yet, I'd say. But look, I mean, if it's new product, if it's coming in and it's available for that, then that well and good. Would I advise farmers to buy it at that? I don't, you know, can't say, Jack, because who knows what's going to happen in terms of markets. I've stopped giving advice on fertilizer because things have gone so mad.
Thanks, Aidan. Back to you in a minute. Adam, if we're to stand back now, we're trying to do something different this week and look forward into 2023, I suppose, and beyond, if you can. Maybe you could start. Maybe you could go further, Adam, and tell me who's going to win the World Cup in 4 years' time when it's back again.
I don't, Jeez, you're asking the wrong man, Jack. You're asking the wrong man. Maybe World Cup in France in September. Maybe that I might be more more au fait with that one. Maybe than the 4 years time. But yeah.
You're right. I'd nearly be with you on that one as well. I'm not sure I have the winner on it either. All the same, but maybe the weather, Adam. Would we try the weather? What's the weather?
Yeah, we're more used to talking about that up here, Jack. We'll give that a stab. look, if it was another year like 2022, we'd take it again in 2023 up this end of the country. Like 2022 was a good one, and we'd definitely take that textbook year again. But it doesn't often come like that now. But we'd definitely take it again. Yeah,
yeah. Adam, we were talking, and if I'm serious now, and I'm looking forward into 2023, and I'm talking about, I suppose, the cost piece. Now we were touched off it there last week, and you were saying, and I saw your piece in the paper in terms of costs went up considerably in 2022, and they're predicted to go again in 2023. And I'll just throw it back at you, like, you know, in terms of, like, is it really that big an issue for you, you know, in terms of that your sector, like, you know, you spread a shake of fertilizer, you use little or no vaccines, a small bit of feed going into a certain number of stock, that costs shouldn't be as big an issue for your sector. Just talk to me around that.
Yeah, I suppose, Jack, you could make that argument. I've heard that argument made before, but if we look at National Farm Survey, and that's the be-all and end-all, I suppose, of looking at figures, we see that suckler incomes are going to be down 20%. You know, rearing farms are going to be down 20% in 2022. That's as a function of input costs going up and output costs not going up enough. And I suppose while suckler farms are low users of fertilizer, probably, and concentrates, they also have low output as well. It's not as if you're taking a low level of inputs off a very high output figure when you're selling. You're actually, it's quite a low output figure as well, because look, we're not stocked to the same element maybe as dairy farms or maybe some cattle finishing farms. You know, you're down at 1.2, 1.3 possibly. So there isn't huge sales at the end of the day. So we can't, we'll say, put a huge amount of money into inputs. And you're right, we'll say we're not big users, but the costs still have affected those farms, you know, three times up in fertilizer. And you just look to 2023 with a little bit of intrepidation in terms of, we probably got away in 2022 because it was such a good year, especially in the Northwest, without spreading a huge amount of fertilizer, and maybe farmers cut back and we still got on good on silage yields and stuff. You just worry if you've done that another year and then another year, what effect maybe depleting soil fertility levels would have. And also on fodder as well, as it was a really good year with getting fodder. If we remember back to last sort of February, March, was really worried about getting enough fertilizer out to get enough fodder in the yard. That has all worked out well, but in next year, if the weather doesn't come good and you have a low amount of fertilizer spread, you could have a low amount of silage in the yard, and that then drives up costs completely then the following winter.
And Adam, speaking of fertilizer, and obviously it's a fairly significant part of that cost piece, we'll say, on some of them farms. I mean, do you like envisage, okay, if the price is going to come back and a touch, like, you know what I mean, the commodity markets are softening, like in terms of the gas piece, I suppose, that's used to produce fertilizer, that's softening. So you would expect a softening in prices. Like, but if it softens a bit, it's still high, right? Relative to where we've been for kind of since the last 10 years, you know, so it's still high. Do you still see a lot of your guys going down a lower fertilizer, lower artificial fertilizer route, or where's the line on that?
Sure, I'd say it will, Jack. I'd say people maybe have even worked out maybe in 2022 that possibly we didn't need as much fertilizer maybe as was going out on some farms, and they've seen that they've got away with a little bit less. And I'd say it really focuses the mind. Fertilizer at 850 a ton really hones in. You know, we've seen a lot of pig slurry moving up this end of the country again in Cavan, Monaghan, and in the northwest around pig farms. It was huge utilization of pig slurry, and some dry stock farmers got away with very little fertilizer on their silage ground, and they brought in pig slurry maybe for a little bit on grazing ground and watered it down. And there was just not thinking outside the box, but there was loads of different movements there that possibly should have been happening all along but didn't happen because fertilizer, I guess, was cheap enough. But this has really focused the mind on other aspects of that, and pig slurry is a great example of that in terms of reducing fertilizer usage.
Yeah, now that you mention it, in terms of that slurry and importing, exporting slurry, and I suppose with the whole nitrates debate that's going on, and I'll chat to Aidan about that in a minute, but I mean, do you see that continuing in terms of that movement of slurry between farms? Like, we'll say, given the, I suppose the you know, the new rules that are coming into the nitrates for, you know, it's going to impact on farms, you know, over 130 kilos of organic nitrogen. That's a relatively low stocked farm, you know. So that rule on the soil sampling, and if there's no soil sampling, they're assuming index 4. And I mean, is that going to be an issue, do you reckon, up your neck of the woods?
I think it is. I think we're going against the grain on that almost in terms of working with each other and working with dairy farmers. The department are putting huge rules there. I had two calls from two farmers this week. One was from a farmer who would have usually taken in, would say, during the year, some slurry from his dairy farm and neighbour. That's actually going to push him over the 150 this year. That means that he can't apply for a less grant next year. And he's just saying, geez, that's really bad in terms of curtailing me because I was helping out a dairy farmer. I was reducing chemical fertilizer usage through the use of that slurry. And here they are going to penalize him now in terms of not being able to go for a grant for that less slurry spreading in the future. And the other farm was actually went for the Department of Agriculture soil sampling program, and his indexes are quite high. And that's really curtailing them now also in terms on the P side of things. Now, in the past, yeah, it was always organic N that was limiting you, but the P now has to be taken account of. And when he counts in what concentrates he's feeding, a weanland system he's on, but he still has a few autumn calves, so he's feeding a bit of meal during the winter, feeding a bit of meal during the summer, and that's driving him up as well in terms of peak amount of the farm. So he actually can't take in a lot in the future from a local dairy farmer. So we're almost going again the grain there as regards to. Yeah, and I don't know whether it's a tightening in on the dairy farmer in terms of that exporting piece or what it is, but it's definitely getting tighter and tighter to be able to do that.
It's going to impact on both sectors, you'd say, yeah. So, and phosphorus, as you say, is going to be a big one further down the line. Like, Adam, let's cut to the chase. Like, in terms of beef price, I suppose, and where you see it, kind of, you know, like we're into the end of December now. In terms of looking forward into, I suppose, the first 3 months and beyond, what's the lie of the land?
Yeah, I suppose, look at Jack, this is going to be the first sort of normal year again. You know, we would have had a bit of an overhang of COVID in 2022, so we're still getting back to normal in terms of food service and stuff like that. So it'll be really interesting to see what way 2023 pans out. At the moment, if we're in December, if we look at sort of where we're going for the first quarter, I'd say we're very, very steady. No big movements, we'll say, really going to take place there. We've talked about it already in terms of that huge numbers that came through the line in October in terms of 40,000 killed a week. They were cattle that I'd say would usually maybe head on into some of January, February, March, but farmers took the decision because of the high costs associated with winter finishing to finish those animals a bit younger and a bit lighter back in October time. I think that's going to help us now in the first quarter of 2023. And looking, I suppose, wider around Europe, you know, Europe is pretty tight. You know, production is coming down in a good few countries. Consumption is coming down as well, but not as much as production. So I'd see it being pretty level. Look, we'll be our estimating that we'll be up in numbers in terms of 2023 as regards kill. I think it's up to the tune of 70,000 they're estimating. But again, exports have been really good and really strong. And we've seen a lot of store cattle move out to the Lebanon, Libya. We've seen those weanlands move out to Turkey. So that, I think that'll help us towards the back end of 2023. So at the moment, looking on the face of it, look at Jack, anything could happen, I suppose, during the year, and you don't know what shocks to a system, a market, anything will take. But at the moment, I think it's pretty steady, and especially I'd be more confident now of the first quarter being good actually for beef. We're seeing at the moment creeping there above €5, which is positive.
Yeah, I mean, in terms, like, we don't know the detail yet, Adam, in terms of cull schemes or exit schemes and you know, it's too, we'll have to let that play out over the next couple of weeks in terms of what exactly is going to happen in terms of compensation and all that kind of thing, like, you know, but in terms of general outlook for the sector, what does it look like looking into 2023?
Sure, look, it's under pressure, Jack, I suppose, and it's going to come to a head, I'd say, with the climate action plan because we're looking at something has to give somewhere. We'll say, I think we've owned up to the fact that that Food Vision report and the Tia Hennessy report, we can't continue with the same numbers of animals going forward in terms of breeding animals. We won't hit our targets. And look, that's a whole other question. Is any other sector going to hit their targets either? But I suppose we shouldn't be starting off at the very beginning thinking that we're not going to hit targets. We've signed a legal document saying that we have to hit those emissions targets. It's a 25%. We can't do that without reducing numbers. So I'd say the pressure is really going to come on. And look at Jack, if we look at policy over the last sort of 2 months, 3 months, we've seen a big push to organics. That's been targeted towards the dry stock sector in terms of moving into organics. That's reduced stocking rate, it's reduced fertilizer, reduced output. It may not mean reduced income on those farms because there's huge support payments coming in there, €300 a hectare. If we look at acres, like any option or any farmer I've talked to talks about fencing off land, talks about riparian margins, talks about extensive grassland. Again, that's less fertilizer. And you might say that's good, but if it's less fertilizer, it's less silage in the pit for the winter, it's less bales, it's less stock on that farm. If we look at BPS, anybody with high value BPS payments, which is again is our dry stock sector, probably pretty much, that they're going to come back hard in 2023 onwards. So that's going to put more pressure on that. You're talking nitrates, and again, people that argue with me, well, nitrates has nothing to do with dry stock farming with very low numbers of derogation, but the nitrates issues on the dairy side of the house is going to put huge pressure on land rental values. So I'm saying full-time suckler farmers, and to be honest, it's maybe full-time suckler farmers in the southeast of the country or the south that are on good land that have been renting a portion of their farm, they're going to find it really difficult, I think, in the future to continue renting that land because they just won't be fit to compete. And we've seen this already in last week's paper, you know, in terms of leash land making €500 an acre. That might have been a once-off, but we're definitely seeing a trend of higher rental values because the pressure is on there on the dairy side of the house, and you know all about this in terms of not wanting to reduce numbers rather than, you know, increase the land area to keep the same number. I'm not saying going up, but to keep the same number. So all those angles are coming in. And then you have the margin, Jack. It's a low margin business. Beef farming is a low margin business. We've seen the National Farm Survey data for 2022 down 20%. So all those things, if you put them all into a circle, I have a piece going up online over Christmas on it. But if you put all them things, it looks as if, you know, the pressure is coming on, that something's going to happen there, something's going to give, and that cull scheme and reduction scheme, I suppose that's what could happen.
I'll talk to Darren about it again, Adam, in terms of the cap reform piece, like in terms of what changes, like, but for your guys, for your listeners, for your sector, I mean, the cap reform piece is changing fundamentally in 2023 in terms of how it's made up, you know. I mean, there's jobs now that your guys need to do in terms of looking ahead into 2023, are specifically around the cap piece and, you know, all the pieces associated with that, like in terms of maybe land leasing or in terms of, you know, entitlements where they are, leasing them or otherwise, etc., that kind of thing. Like there's a big change there coming in 2023.
It's absolutely huge, Jack, and I don't think we've got enough buy-in maybe from farmers on this one. And they're sort of saying, well, look, we'll deal with that when it comes. But I suppose dealing with that next October when it comes into the account is an awful shock to the system for some farmers in terms of the drop that they're going to take. So really, really important over the next couple of months. And I know Darren has covered a lot in terms of checking that new scheme, what the requirements are, checking your maps, and just seeing how much that's good. It's very simple. You type in, you know, entitlements, cap entitlements, and you can type in your entitlement value. It'll give you back the value that your entitlements are going to be next October. But really important, just even over the couple of days that maybe we're off, over the next couple of weeks, just to do that and settle down and see where you're going and what's happening. Because look at it, on the dry stock side of the house, that's what it's all about. It's schemes, it's BPS, it's making sure everything is 100% watertight in terms of, because it's over 100% of your income in a lot of those dry stock farms. So it's really important that we get it right.
Adam, in terms of, last question now, and I'll leave it at that this week. I mean, in terms of the market and what influences the market, you've obviously, you've said it to me here before, that the export piece is important in terms of it's taking animals out of Ireland. That puts more competition for the stock that are left in Ireland. The exports piece seems to have picked up a touch. Like, is that fair to say in 2022? Will that continue into 2023?
I think it will. 2023, though, Jack, is probably maybe the last. We really need to knuckle down on this one and get our ABR in control in terms of having a control program there, because we're not going to get into Europe with calves, we'll say, after 2024, 2025. So very important that we start working on that in 2023. I think 2023 is going to be another good year for exports. We've got very big demand coming from the Middle East and Turkey and North Africa and Morocco, which is very, very positive. And numbers seem to be tight out in those countries. And we've had numerous ships sail there over the last number of weeks, heading for weanlings to Turkey and we'll say forward store cattle to Libya, with another load to Lebanon. So very, very positive to see all those, and calf exports as well. But I suppose there is, you know, there's a bit of worry there on the horizon around calf exports, what's going to happen there, because that would have a huge impact on our beef industry here as regards numbers. Because look, it's supply and demand all the time on the beef side of the house. If that's a very fine balance in terms of supply and demand. And if that teeters above, if supply teeters above demand, the factories have the power to pull things back. And if it goes the other way, as we've seen last June when beef headed for €6 a kilo and supplies were tight, that the ball is at the farmer's foot. So it's very, very important that we can't underestimate the power of those live exports. And it's very, very important that we do everything in our power to continue them going up 12% on 2021 in terms of 2022 levels. If we held that again in 2023, I'd be very happy in terms of going forward into 2024 and 2025 as regards beef.
Darren, as we look forward, I suppose, into 2023, I mean, in terms of, there's a bit of scanning being done at the moment in terms of, I suppose, looking at the lamb crop that's coming in 2023. Is there any kind of indications yet? I know it's always early days and you're kind of, I suppose, going on small numbers in terms of predictions on on certain scanners, etc., and that kind of thing. But any predictions yet, or any kind of forecast that you can see on the lamb crop?
Yeah, I suppose the main feedback I'd have got, Jack, is it's probably the greatest level of variability that we've seen for years. Where that's coming from is that some of the, say, flocks that were really impacted for drought, they've scanned quite poorly. And then you come across some flocks or some scanners are saying that they're going into flocks that should have scanned quite poorly because of that, and they haven't. Now, I think some of it is probably down to, say, lambing date, what pressure yours are under at the time, what pressure yours have been under since, and also, I suppose, a bit on weather conditions. Some of the scanners would say that there is signs that yours in poor body condition, that they thought that there might have been more embryo loss indoors or reabsorption of embryos. So it's a difficult one just to put on. I would say that if you were to call it, you're probably marginally lower so far. Now, that might pick up in this. As we go through, say, January, we'll have more the, I'd say, what I describe as the flocks along the western coast being scanned, later lambing flocks, and them flocks weren't compromised as much on energy intake. And I'd say there shouldn't be a major difference there. Some of those, yes, definitely yours were in lower condition. But even if we go back to the Chagas Better Farms or the Northern Ireland Sheep Program farms, that there was a big variation between dry areas where feed was, say, tight, and on areas they had a good grass growing year, that some of those had higher scanning rates, or sorry, I won't say higher, they were comparable to other years, whereas the places where yours are under a bit more, say, body condition on average was lower, had a slightly higher barren rate and a slightly lower lambing percentage.
Okay. Okay, that my buddy Darren, and I it's only the one sheep buddy, but he says that he's about 120 yos. He had 13 triplets. He scanned there last week or 10 days ago. He had 13 triplets. He had 5 yos not in lamb, and he had a good few more singles than he would normally have. Like, you know, so it tallies a little bit with what you're saying, and he would have been on relatively dry land, I suppose, like, you know, the kind of a way. So now mixed, but mostly dry, but. But yeah, so and sorry, Darren, my reason for saying that then is he's down on yours, and he's considering maybe buying a couple of maybe in lamb yours or something like that. Like, in terms of when that kind of market will start up, we'll say in earnest now. I mean, when does that type of a sale, like, he's looking for someone maybe getting out of sheep or getting out of yours, we'll say, and selling off. Like, I mean, and where's the price point on that now?
Yeah, no real price point as yet. Now, I've seen a couple of small lots being sold in recent weeks. There was a lot there in Tuller recently. There was a few in Blessington. It's sort of just small, maybe 20s, 30s.
Right.
And in general, Jack, you're saying that the fellas wouldn't have got paid for keeping them yours and putting them in lamb. Like, I've seen hoggets, nice quality Suffolk hoggets. So not that big of hoggets, all right, but between 185 and 200. Right. Another sale where there was a genuine reduction, and price is average between 180 and 220. And you'll always see that, I suppose, in the genuine clearance, because there's less of a fear that you're buying in somebody else's problems. And when you see the whole flock being sold. And I think that's always a concern, particularly where your mate, if he's, I presume, if he's probably lambing sort of February sometime, so he's not hugely far away. Like, at this stage, if you're buying in sheep, I'd be inclined to try and keep them separate if I could at all until they've after lambed. Not simple at all, Jack.
No.
But if it was a small number and he could outwinter them in a spot for now, like, it all depends on circumstances. But when you are buying in animals, it's a bit like the Trojan horse. You just don't know, like, what you're buying.
100%. I suppose, Darren, that leads us on to you looking in the crystal ball in terms of next year and the lamb price. Like, you know what I mean? Where it is coming off now as we kind of close 2022, and I suppose where you're seeing it kind of materialize for the kind of first half of the year.
Yeah, sure. You could sum it up, Jack. We're 30 to 40 cent, at least, probably more behind where we were this time last year. At the same time, our concentrate costs of finishing are probably gone 30% up. There was a recent webinar there a couple of weeks ago at Northern Ireland Sheep Programme. There was an interesting figure. It was 33% up on year on year, and it was 52% up on 2 years ago. Like, so that's a big increase, which I think will have an implication on the number of sheep. I suppose how quick they come fit, because this year I'd say that there might be lambs carried over until if you had a mild spring finished off grass. But like, I think there's going to be a lot more hoggets carried later into 2023 than what there was into 2022, just going on sales, and particularly hill lambs, because there's a lot of light hill lambs about. And as we know, that they take a lot of meal to finish. You're upwards of up.
Sorry, Darren, I cut across you, but okay. So that's we'll call it in terms of does imports play a role in terms of how that can influence lamb price, I suppose.
Yeah, we always hear, Jack, about imports, and we always hear about big numbers of imports in general. Jack, there isn't a huge amount of imports on the sheep side. It's a few thousand ton, which over the large, say, period isn't massive on the sheep side. Yes, okay. It can have an impact on certain weeks, and it can be used to keep, I suppose, a barrier on top of prices going up. But in general, it's not a massive concern.
Like, okay,
I'd say.
On a tangent on that, Darren, do imports into the UK impact then maybe on the Irish price?
Definitely, and that's something that I would be more concerned about going forward, given where New Zealand sheep meat exports are at the minute, given where Australian sheep meat exports are. And like, look, we're a long way off getting in the year figures, but up until, I think the most recent was up until October, China had imported 110 or 120,000 less tons of sheep meat up for the first 9-10 months of the year. Like, put that into perspective. We export generally around 60,000 tons, it's nearly twice the amount of sheep meat that we have. So that has huge implications. Now, there has been, we've seen the demand from the US has been increasing year on year, but that has just accounted for some of the shortfall in Chinese imports this year. Thankfully, New Zealand exports were also down slightly. Australian exports are up, but they have found other markets as well. But some of that sheep meat is making its way back to, say, the EU. So the EU would have imported about 10,000-12,000 tons of sheep meat extra up to the end of October. It'd be a similar sort of level in the UK. So you take 20,000 tons of that sheep meat coming in, it has to find a home. So in recent times, I suppose, if we went back maybe 18 years, that would have came in and it would have found a home very easily because it was offered at such a discount.
Okay.
But where sheep prices are at the moment, and take the cost of transport into the equation, it isn't just as attractive. So that's the only thing that's sort of helping us at the moment. The other thing that is helping us, I suppose, a small bit, is just the resistance against lockdown regulations in China, and say the Chinese people saying that they don't want any more of these real strict lockdowns.
Yeah.
That is sort of, I suppose, pushing against the closure of food service outlets. And you would hope there would be a recovery at the start of the year, but it's the one cloud that would be slightly on the horizon. Now, turn that, say, argument totally around. And if you look at your production across Europe, in every country it's fallen, with the exception of Irish production is up this year. Greek production is up. The reason why Greek production is up is because of higher costs and drought, and they've liquidated some of their ewe flock. But all of the other main producing flocks, France, Spain, the UK, numbers continue to fall. Like, so that does have a positive. But I would just be cautious, given where the price of concentrates are and given them few things on sheep prices hitting the heights in the first few months of the year that it did last year. Like, sheep prices went up towards €8 a kilo. They need to be there, Jack, given where concentrate prices are. But you just would slightly question it, given we're 30, 40, 50 cent below where we were this time last year.
Okay. And Darren, before I pin you to the ropes in terms of naming a price, in terms of concentrate price and feed price. Does it have that much of an impact on the sheep sector? Like, you know, given the level of usage, like, I mean, is it that important, the feed price piece, in terms of what's in it for farmers?
Yes, to give you a short answer, and I'll just put it in context. If you take 200 lamb in your flock, and if you take that the concentrate price has been 50% up, you're probably spending somewhere 1,500 euros extra. Now, that might not seem like a massive jump, but relative to the income generating potential of that flock, it is a sizable chunk of the potential gross margin that you have. So that's on the yore side. On the lamb side, it's even more critical in that if you put in a 30 kilo lamb or put in a light lamb and they're eating upwards of 1.1, 1.2 kilos a day, like very, very quickly, Jack, you can run into big costs. Or if it's conversely, put that on the early lamb flocks, and we know that them lambs can eat 50, 60 kilos handy. They could, some of them, if lambs will go 70, 80 kilos.
Right.
Like that extra is a big, big addition to cost. Like it's something that farmers, I suppose, are wary of. And that's one of the big reasons why, I suppose, the light hill lamb market has been under so much pressure this year. Now, finishers have been buying away at those, but it has decimated the returns to the hill flock. So it's some of them are taking chances on this, but it's the lambs coming in at a lower price, and long term that'll have big implications. I think we touched on that last week or the week before around, say, I think there was a question from a hill farmer that wasn't going to put the ewes in lamb, but it just shows you the knock on consequences.
Okay, no, right, you've convinced me on the feed price. Where so would you be kind of, for someone that's sitting down doing a budget, looking ahead into 2023? Look at it, I won't hold it to you just now, but I'll come back to you in June, where do you reckon the price will settle for kind of for your we go main crop, Darren Robbins, kind of stay away from the early things.
Yeah, well, if we just touch, I'd be confident. Well, sorry, I won't say confident, but I'd be hopeful that the early lamb crop will be up over 750. That given where Everton is, given where it costs, and given where the French Spanish prices are at the moment, British lamb won't be in the system that quick. You'd hope that would be. The big one I'd have, say, this next year is for farmers to keep an eye on the Muslim, it's the religious festival. So Ramadan is early, Ramadan and Easter, March, April. But it's the Eid al-Adha festival, which always gives a significant boost. That's now brought forward into June next year. And there's always a lull in supply after that. Now, I think that if you have concentrate costs staying where they are, and if you have fertilizer costs staying where they are, I would expect there to be a lull in output in May, June, and the start of July. Just by merit of sheep farmers won't be putting out as much fertilizer. We got the bounce this year, I suppose, that there was fertilizer in the ground or there was nutrients there, wasn't as washed out or exposed. I will be questioning that next year, and I will be questioning feeding the same volumes of concentrates, because when farmers were coming out of spring last year, they didn't have the big bills going back to the previous year, whereas now they have the big concentrate bills started, they're feeding earlier because yours are in maybe lower condition. So they're going to be buying those expensive concentrates for longer. And I think that you'll have a lull. So I would expect the prices will remain higher sort of May, June into July. And then we'll follow our normal season pattern of prices going down. And I don't see them being too much dissimilar to this year, Jack, in around that. I think that for the sheep sector to have any hope of surviving, the prices we had this year has to be the new norm. And like we can't be going back to the euro kilo less of recent years. Like it just wouldn't work at a decimate.
Right, okay. Not tenable. Excellent. That's enough, Darren, I'll say, on the sheep side. I mean, for you, the other big changes looking forward into 2023, of course, is the whole area around cap reform. We've done a couple of meetings on it around the country. We have a couple to do in January as well. But I mean, there's big changes, Darren. I'll say a lot of farmers don't actually realise the change just yet that's happened.
Yeah, sure. Big changes, Jack. Big changes for farmers, big changes for advisors. I was talking to a good friend of mine that was in college with over Christmas, and he said, you know, he said to his grand, he said, I checked the phone, he said, a few days wondering, he said, it was just quiet, he said, it went from acres questions, acres, organics, the sheep improvement scheme. Now he's starting to ramp up and get some questions on that because the deadline is the 9th of January. So there's a few questions coming through. But like, there was just, I suppose the point I'm making, there's just so much new coming at farmers. Yeah. And that's going to continue for the next few months. So we're going to be in the exact same territory. You're going to see maps coming out depending on how acres say the numbers. Sometime in February, the department had said the start of February, that could go into the middle of February, I think, just on holding over, just on getting all those maps, say, done before the BIS payments come out. BIS maps come out. So you're going to have new BIS maps, or basic payment scheme. You're going to have eco schemes to digest. Now, as we've talked numerous times, most farmers will get that by Space for Nature. You're going to have front loading to contend with. And a big one for me, Jack, coming down on the line is what's happening on the lease and entitlements. Because to me, that conversation would have to happen earlier next year. And there'll be a lot of people watching to see what level entitlements settle at or what value. Like if we look at the last 5 years and newer leasing entitlements, to me, we could be pretty certain that it'll be somewhere around sort of you keeping 60% of the value, me keeping 40%. That could have ebbed and flowed maybe by 68%. We don't have an idea, Jack, what's going to happen next year, because you take your eco scheme away from the value of your entitlement, you take your front loading away, you also take convergence into account, and no one knows where the smaller pot of money is going to settle and how much of an appetite there will be for those.
Yeah, I mean, Darren, is it, you know, the way trading of entitlements, it centres around kind of, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, 10 auctioneers that are entitled to trade or that have the rights to trade entitlements. Like they obviously can't do anything until something comes on their desk, you know, in terms of that they need to trade, like, you know. So, and but how or where then is that kind of, I call it, multiplier factor or that conversion, how is that established?
I suppose it's the market that establishes it, Jack, and like it's probably to a certain element dim auctioneer starting the conversation and maybe starting to put a figure on something. And for me, like when anybody should be doing is going into the cap calculator to see what that entitlement is worth.
Okay.
I suppose look at an entitlement, €260, take off front loading of €40. Take off your eco scheme off, which is about €65, brings you down on €160. Like, will, and it could be this that it stays at 60-40 or whatever it be, 55-55, and that could be the way it continues. But it's until sort of deals start to emerge in that, it's hard to know. But the complicated one, see, I suppose, that's not as complicated as what happens in a situation where that 260, if you were giving me 60%, you were keeping 60%, I was taking 40%. But what happens now? The eco scheme is gone. Front loading is gone. Now, to me, the only place that they can remain in the conversation is if you're leasing me 1 hectare of land for every entitlement, then you have some cause to discuss or to see whether you should get some of that eco scheme money back. To me, if you're not giving me land with it, well, then good luck.
Straight deal, no mess, and forget about the eco schemes. Exactly.
Now, that's Aidan could talk different when it comes to us and the pressure on nitrates, but to me, that's where the territory are at.
Yeah. Okay. Fair play, Darren. We've done it. We've looked a nice bit into 2023 in terms of the sheep price. I mean, that whole cap reform piece, Darren, that we just touched off. Like, I mean, when are kind of the first kind of, I suppose, written documentation coming to farmers on that? Like, we'll say in 2023, or kind of what's the timing piece around that?
So the target for that was the department said they hope to have it out at the start of February. Now, and that they did say that they had to have all of the acres and all of the organics, say, plans that they had to be mapped into it. So what I mean is that if you went into acres, all those measures have to come out on the maps. That's in theory what needs to happen. So given that there was a 16 days, sorry, it was 14 or 16 days that that was extended, there was 14 or 16 days later map and brought it in close to Christmas. And now you have all of these extra plans in limbo, or we're not sure about what's going to happen. That could push it into February. But the department are still keen, given all the changes, to get documentation out to farmers in February to allow that, say, because we'll be still in the middle of May, we'll be closing. And it's always been February, March, April, May. Now, you could realistically say it could go to the end of February. But I'd say after that, the department would be getting sort of cautious that there's a lot of changes, a lot of things happening. Farmers will be getting into the busy period. The beauty about having out in February is that a lot of farmers, before they get busy, they have a chance to look after it.
But I was just going to make that point. Like, I mean, it is, you're getting into the busy season once you hit February, because there's a bit more going on in the fields, there's maybe more going on in yards, there's a bit of in and out, et cetera, and that kind of thing. Like, you know, I mean, farmers, you know, are going to be have to tune themselves up fairly quick in turn, and they should have a bit of groundwork done before they hit February, it's fair to say that.
Yeah, definitely. Like, and even one of the elements, what I'd be saying, is that people could look at the Space for Nature, could actually look at their maps and see before they need to go into their advisor. So every farmer will have to check their maps to be able to see what the department has marked up as hedgerows or drains or streams that they can check and see what that is. Now, we still don't know whether the department are going to send out those maps. They said in one of our CAP meetings, no, it was only going to be that they were going to be available online and that your farmer would have to go in, or his advisor would have to go in and print them off, because they want them to be changed online, so they don't want to be given out sort of maps. But what I'd be saying is this, if a farmer can't get access to himself, maybe his advisor could print them individual maps, or there's some way they could look at them, because it's very hard. It's a lot easier when you have a map walking around the field to see what's marked as of trying to guess or trying to mark and then come back in again.
Yeah, 100%. Darren, 100%. Leave it at that. Chat to you next week. Aidan, I talked to Darren on CAP reform, and obviously it's very important to the cattle and sheep side of the house in terms of actually family farm income and the impact that it has. Like, but for your guys, there's other factors as well. And I know you've called out leasing in terms of an issue for a lot of your guys and the tillage guys, it's fair to say, in terms of leasing and land and the impact that CAP reform. Maybe just give us a kind of a snapshot on why you feel that leasing piece is important related to that CAP reform job.
Yeah, Jack, I suppose the main reason is that in a lot of cases, the single farm payment, as it was known, the BPS, or the base payment, as it will be known in the future, was going back to the landowner. So the farmer leasing the land was drawing down the entitlements and then giving them back to the landowner, and was packaged as part of the lease payment or whatever else. So, you know, the landowner was calling around to the farmer every October and December and pick up the payment, and it was all agreed in advance of what the sum of money was going to be, and everyone was kind of, you know, somewhat sure of what was going to happen. The issue now is all those payments are changing, and you know, the actual base, the payment itself, and the, you know, what we would have traditionally been known as the BPS or the single farm payment, is now a much smaller portion of the overall pie. And what was greening is now called an eco scheme. And in order to get that eco scheme, you have to do something, you know. Whatever that payment is going to be, or whatever that scheme is going to be that you're involved in. Now, in many cases, as Darren said, it's Space for Nature will cover a lot of people, but in other cases, they have to do extra stuff. And maybe in 4 or 5 years' time, we could all have to do extra stuff, because the Space for Nature really might get us, you know, half of the way there, let's say. So, look, there's uncertainty there. And I suppose most farmers are kind of pleasantly surprised that Space for Nature will get them over the line. But that's not a reason to set a bad example, because we don't know. This could be, you know, this format, you know, while it might change in certain areas, could be with us for a long time to come. So it's important that we're aware of that. But I suppose the point I'm making, Jack, is that, you know, that payment should really be going to the person farming the land, not the landowner, in some cases, you know. And then in other ways, then it's important to say as well that, like, you know, because that payment is now changing, and in certain situations it's a lot less than what it was previously, the farmer renting the land or leasing the land, you know, does he or she have to give back the full level of what it was always you know, the full payment that they were getting before, or are they now going to get back to smaller payments? So, because that's all that they're getting in December or October, and they're going to have to give back. So it's a communication thing, really, Jack. I'm not explaining that very well, but it's a communication thing. They need to give back. They need to understand with the landowner what they're going to get back every December, and because it's not fair, I would say, on the landowner to have to give back more than what they're getting from Europe. Put it that way.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Like, and then to have that conversation, Aidan, I suppose both parties need to be informed in terms of having an idea of what's actually going to happen. And Darren mentioned the calculator. Like, so I'm sure there's a bit of work going on in the background there for a lot of dairy farmers.
Yeah, and it's maybe spend the next 6 months just raising awareness of it, that this is what's going to happen, and talk to your landowners and say to them that, look, your payment is going to fall by X, Y, or Z. In many cases, they'll be probably aware that these changes are happening, but they might be aware of the finite details of it, because the communication now is not going to them, it's going to the person leasing the entitlements off them. So there's a bit of groundwork to be done, I'd say, in advance of next year. What we don't want is a big surprise next October when they come to the person farming the land's door looking for the payment that they always got, and they're only going to get a third of it or whatever else. And it's not all to do with the eco schemes, that's just one aspect of it. But I know some dairy farmers who are leasing a lot of land, and they're saying, well, look, they're going to retain the eco scheme no matter what happens. That's their right, if you want, because they're farming the land and they're making themselves compliant to get the eco scheme. So in that case, the landowners are going to get less anyway, because there's less of the pot to go around.
Yeah. And this conversation gets very interesting, Aidan, between the landowner and the lessee when land price and leasing price is shooting upwards as a result of other policies, we'll say, that are impacting. Like, so it can become a tricky conversation, because those leasing the land feel like this, and they go to the market and they could get more maybe than what you're paying, or they might get someone else completely. It can be a tricky conversation.
Absolutely, Jack. Yeah, that's why Lincoln indented the nitrates, and it's going to be a big increase in the demand for land from the area farmers, because they're going to have to get extra land just to comply with the new rules and in order to keep cow numbers the same. So, the decision on those farms is, you got to have less cows or more land. And if they're going to the market, if there's a whole pool of extra farmers looking for land in the next couple of years, it's going to have a massive impact, a distorting impact on the price of land. But as I always say to farmers that are, landowners, we say, who are saying, I could get a lot more money for my land if I go to X, Y, and Z, it's also important to remember that in some cases, they're not the top dollar that's, quoted as being paid for land isn't actually being paid, or it's not being paid on time, or there's some other issues, So, like, I'd say to landowners, they need to get someone in who's going to mind their land, number one, and pay on time and look after them and look after the land. And it's not always the person that pays the most that does that. So, people have been burned before, Jack, and it's important not to let that happen again.
Yeah. That we'll stick with the nitrates piece there while we're talking about it. Like, you had a meeting in Carn, and you have another couple of meetings coming up again in January on the nitrates job. Like, again, Aidan, just for those that haven't been maybe right up to speed with it, like, just give us a kind of the ABC on it in terms of nitrates and maybe one or two of the key issues with the nitrates.
Yeah, so look, banding, Jack, is being introduced, and that's identifying what milk yield category each herd in Ireland is in, and then assigning them a different kilograms of organic nitrogen per cow figure to those herds. So the range is from 80, 92, and 106 per cow, based on how much milk that they produced historically or on average over the last 3 years. So for next year, it's based on milk yield in 2021 and 2022. So they can't change that now. That is what it is. At this stage, you're stuck with that then, whatever your figure is for 2023, it is. So most farmers are going to be either in the top category, which is around 20% of farmers, or in the middle category, which is, in around 75-80% of farmers are in that middle category. So, between the two of those, they're in that, most farmers are going to be in 92 or 106. And for all those farmers in, that's a considerable increase of what it was previously, which was 89 kilograms across the board. And then go back 2 years ago, it was 85 kilograms across the board. So all farmers then, their figure per cow is, a lot of farmers, their figure per cow is increasing. And that's okay in most situations, because the maximum they can go to is either 170 to get into the per hectare to get into the derogation, or if they're in a derogation, the maximum they can be in then is 250. So for most farmers, they're not going to hit the 250. You know, they're fine. There's a small cohort of farmers who are highly stocked across the farm, and maybe they're, you know, exporting slurry or bringing in silage or whatever else. You know, the small number of farmers in that kind of system, and they're going to be affected by this. But, you know, so that's fine, right? But the big thing that's coming, Jack, is in 2024, there's a midterm review happening this year at the end of 2023, and there's going to be a big change coming there, in that the 250 is going to change for the majority of farmers in Ireland, I would suggest, back to 220. So on the one hand, you're banning increasing the figure per cow, and then on the other hand, then you've got the commission then saying that we're no longer going to give you 250, it's going to go down to 220. So you're going to hit your peak, you know, the peak amount of organic nitrogen you're allowed per hectare much quicker than you would have previously. And for most farmers, then it's going to mean, most dairy farmers, it's going to mean they're going to have to get extra land or reduce cow numbers in order to comply. Or, you know, exporting the slurry is another option, Jack, but we've discussed it before. It's getting harder and harder to do that. And I mean, for me, I can't see that as being a viable option now. And farmers that are currently exporting slurry in order to remain either out of the irrigation or to remain inside the derogation of 250, like it's a really dangerous place to be, I would say, in terms of remaining compliant.
Yeah, long term, looking at the business and what it is like. Yeah, so Aidan, just in terms of 2023, in terms of the organic nitrogen banding piece, that's going to come at them in 2023. The 250 down to the 220, that's a 2024 issue.
Yeah, so but it's 12 months time what's going to happen. Like, it's all very quick, you know, and the issue is, and we heard it at the night that back, you know, in December in Carn, like, it's the measures that farmers are taking on board now, be it banding, be it the less chemical nitrogen, like 20% less nitrogen spread in 2022 compared to 2021. So that's going to have a big impact on the amount of overall nitrogen in the system, all the loading impacts. That's not being accounted for, because the water quality measurements that are going to determine the reduction from 250 to 220 is based on what happened in 2022 versus 2021. And a lot of these measures aren't coming into force really until 2023. So it's going to, you know, a lot of those figures won't, a lot of that benefit won't really be fully accrued, I would say. And water quality is a long-term game anyway. Like, you'd need to be looking at, like, EPA look at water quality in three-year cycles, because it's, you know, these things take time to evolve. And now the commission only wants it, you know, to look at one year in isolation. For me, it's a very tall ask, and it's putting huge pressure on the overall Irish agriculture, because you're now going to have, you know, sheep and beef farmers like Darren and Adam or whatever, who might be leasing land, you know, and their farmers are leasing land, a small proportion of their farm perhaps. But they're going to be now competing with this land from dairy farmers who might even be in the same county as them. But they're, you know, they need this land in order to comply with the rules. And it's not as though they needed it for actual stock. You know, in most cases, dairy farmers are perfectly capable of feeding the stock to have in terms of producing enough grass and winter feed for them. But they're going to have this extra, you know, 15, 20% of land just sitting there to have it on paper. And it's just a nonsensical type of a rule, you know.
Yeah, so as you say, there's knock-on impacts on the other sectors, the cattle, sheep and tillage sector. It's not just a dairy problem. Like, so, okay, Aidan, I've enough on leasing and camp reform. I've enough on nitrates. Talk to me about milk prices and where things are at. You were the speaker again in Carn, I suppose, a Rabobank official and dairy analyst, and he was looking at the markets. He was relatively positive, I'll say, Aidan, in terms of looking forward into 2023.
Yeah, Jack, he was, you know, I mean, he was saying that, you know, he expects to see a 50, you know, in front of milk price for 2023. Now, he did say that was in Holland, you know, and the Dutch price probably didn't get as high as the Irish price did this year. So we were averaging around 50, you know, we're 58 centiliters, I suppose, base price at peak. It's back a couple of cents in Holland. And maybe we're going to see more of a reduction in milk price because of that, maybe as well. Look, butter has a big influence in our milk price here in Ireland, as you know, and butter prices have fallen probably a little bit more than the general basket of dairy goods. So you're maybe we're going to be a little bit more exposed than what he was suggesting, but it's still small enough of a difference, you'd say. So he's relatively positive, I would say, in milk price, as you say. Chagas did their own analysis then. They came out with their situation and outlook, and they're probably a little bit more negative. They were saying, you know, a 15% reduction in milk price for 2023, which is, you know, 8 or 9 cents a litre. So you're back then to, you know, less than 50 cents a litre for on average, you would take the Chagas prediction. And they're, you know, like the Rabobank man didn't really get into commodities that much, only to say that he expects feed prices to kind of fall. Chagas analysis are saying feed prices are actually going to rise. So the Chagas analysis is probably more negative overall on the outlook, which is, you know, it is what it is, and that's what they've come up with. They're saying dairy profits are going to fall on average by about 30% in 2023, which is still, you know, on average over 100,000 of a family farm income on dairy farms, which is still obviously good and historically very good. But back a bit on last year, the Rabobank man was less optimistic. Well, he was suggesting that global supply won't increase, you know, in line as it normally would because prices are high. So he was saying that's a positive in terms of keeping milk price quite high, because we're not going to see a big influx of milk from the likes of New Zealand or Australia or the rest of Europe, really, because the labor isn't there, feed costs are so high. Just not going to come, you know. So that's positive, we'd say, and that's what's really going to hold up milk price, I think, for as long as possible. But that said, Jack, you know, we need to be clear here. There is probably going to be a correction coming at some point in terms of milk prices, and you know, that's going to happen earlier in the year, is what he was saying, and then strengthen again, you know, quarter 2, quarter 3 in 2023.
Exactly. And the piece that Darren was talking about, the impact of, like you said, sheep meat production. Darren was saying sheep meat production is down. You're saying milk production is down across the EU and across New Zealand as well. And the other piece then that Darren talked about was China and the impact China has in the market. And again, your analyst, your Rabobank man, said like that the what happens in China, everyone will be watching as well in terms of dairy demand, and especially that January demand for powder in from China, because that's a big one for them.
Yeah, and that's all New Zealand based, Jack. You know, they have very a load of stuff in New Zealand, and their milk supply in New Zealand is back this year anyway. So it's also, you know, tightening up a supply there, which is positive. But the big thing, I suppose, is the COVID policy in China, and what impact it's going to have in terms of the cities and the city economies. But that's where the money is in China, and there's where all the big purchasing power is. And I suppose, like Darren was talking about it earlier, like there's a big change in policy there, and which is looking positive in terms of increasing the demand for food, more people out socializing again, more people eating out. And you're going to see, I'd say, an increase in demand for dairy in China. That means you're going to have to re-enter the market, and they've been silent for a long time. But if that happens, and it probably mightn't happen in Q1, it's probably more likely to happen, and he was saying in Q2 and Q3 2023. So like that's why there's probably going to be a little more of a correction. And talking to some of the milk, you know, the milk co-ops and the dairy co-ops in Ireland, they're cautious about what's going to happen to milk price in the short term, in I suppose January, February, March, but more optimistic for later in the year.
Aidan, I talked to Darren on feed price and the impact that has on the sheep business. Like in terms of the two big ones on the dairy side, feed and fertilizer, again, like, I mean, you had that piece of analysis there at the Chagas Dairy Conference suggesting that, you know, all costs were up, you know, give or take. I think the average, the basket of goods was up 33 or 35%, I think, in terms of an increasing cost. Mm. That'll have a big bearing on the margin your guys are making, like in 2023.
Sure, it will, Jack. Yeah, but I mean, there's two things with meal prices, as I always say. There's the cost of it and how much of it you use. And like it, 2022, take, you know, last year was a high user meal because the weather was poor during the summer months when farmers down south and the East Coast had to feed way more. So plenty of lads who normally feed 600 kilos a meal, let's say, had to feed 900 kilos a meal. And it's the same, those that normally fed a ton of meal had to feed a ton and a half a meal. That's a 50% increase, like. So it's a big user of you know, it's the usage of meal has a big bearing on the overall profitability of it. Look, I don't think meal price is going to change that much in the short term, in the next 6 months. I can't see them changing much, whether that's up or down. I could be wrong on that, but that's my take on it. I'd still be budgeting, you know, meal to be at the, you know, the as kind of where it is, the high 300s and 400 euros a ton mark for dairy ration. And I can't see that changing much, you know, but I mean, you're right, like it does have a big bearing on it. And fertilizer the same, you know, I mean, we mentioned it at the start of the show, it's high, and there is talk of it reducing, but a lot of farmers have already purchased their fertilizer requirements for at least 6 months of the year. And that's given them surety of it, because we said at the time, you know, it's a cost, it's a bigger cost in the business not having fertilizer as having it. So yeah, a lot of those costs are going to be sunk for 2023.
Yeah, to finish up, in terms of, you know, I suppose that whole business around calves and rearing calves on farm, calves being sold for exports, calves being sold onto other beef farmers, etc., and that kind of thing. Like, I mean, in terms of 2023, and I suppose looking ahead in terms of when these calves start hitting the market at the end of February, early March, etc., and the flush of calves right through March and April, getting out there. Like, I mean, any big changes coming that you can see happening, or kind of even at farm level, not to mind kind of at industry level, in terms of what you can see happening?
Sure, at farm level, Jack, the big thing those people that buy those calves, the beef farmers buy those calves, are saying to me is the cost of milk replacement. And like, if that was 75 or 80 euro a bag, an awful lot of those farmers are just going to exit the market, because the margin just isn't there. You know, it's a tight margin business. We've seen it in Thrive, you know, that our demo farm in Cashel. Like, there's, you know, it is a tight, even with the best of production and the best of animal genetics, it's a tight margin business. And if you're, it's, you know, such a big increase happened during the summer on the price of milk price, where a lot of those farmers are saying, we're going to step out of it this year, or else, you know, we want a lot less for calves, or give us something towards the cost of milk price if we're going to rear them. So that was the one thing there. But I suppose maybe more medium term or long term, Jack, I'd say there's going to be more older calves hitting the market. So traditionally, we'd had dairy farmers selling their calves at 2 weeks of age, or as early as they could. There's a bit of a mindset change coming, and it might happen in time for this year, but it's happening, you know, gradually. They're prepared to hold on to calves for a little bit longer, sell them a little bit stronger. The 50 kilo can, you know, live weight now that we had kind of introduced last year is now going to be more and more, you know, we're probably going to see that grow over time as well. Now, not everyone will be happy to hear that, but that's kind of the reality of where the market is going. The beef farmers, they want these stronger calves, they want them reared better, and they want to get them for the same price or less. You know, and that's kind of where it's at. Obviously, look, there's a whole question mark surrounding the shipping of calves. The live transport of calves from Ireland to the continent is under pressure. You know, the roll-on, roll-off transport system that we have is probably stressed in a number of aspects. Number one, the shipping companies themselves aren't that keen, by all accounts, of this kind of happening, because it's leaving themselves exposed to facilitating, you know, issues maybe further down the line. And then, you know, new changes to EU policy around like the live transport of calves is also going to have an impact on this. And, you know, there's some commentators saying that time is up. You know, there's only a year or two left of live transport of calves, which means there's going to be an extra 200,000 dairy bred calves left in the country that farmers will be looking to find homes for. So that's if that happens, you know, and I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. I'm more optimistic. This is the longer term game. You know, we're members of the EU. They can't just stop us from moving goods from which are calves from one member state to the next. We're living the free market. You know, maybe something else is going to happen. Maybe we're going to have to purchase, the industry might have to purchase a ship that calves are going to go on, and they're fed in water and bedded on it. And if it takes a couple of days for them to get across it, that's so be it. You know, that I think something radical is going to have to happen within the industry if we're content around the live transport of calves.
Thanks for that, Aidan. As I said at the top of the show, Adam had a chat with Sean McMahon from Grassland Agro. Let's have a listen.
Okay, I'm delighted to be joined by Sean McMahon, who's a regional sales manager with Grassland Agro. Sean, you're welcome to the show. I suppose over the next sort of 10 or 15 minutes, we want to touch up a number of things in 2023. You're going to have to get out your crystal ball here, because I'm going to ask you a few tough questions. I suppose the first one on price, look, it's on the tips of everybody's tongue. We've seen some farmers move to purchase a complement of the fertilizer requirements in 2022. Look, that suited maybe some farmers in terms of, especially dairy farmers, where income was good, and I guess they're maybe managing a bit of tax there or whatever. But for other farmers, maybe they stood out and hoping for it to come back a bit. What's your own view on in terms of price there, you know, for the first quarter, we'll say, of 2023?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Adam. I just checked the top drawer there to look for the crystal ball, but I didn't come across it. But anyway, yeah. No, look, I think there's sort of an acceptance out there at the minute that fertilizer prices are well above where that would be in a normal year. In the near future, in the first quarter of the year, I can't see there being an awful lot of movement in price. I think that, as you rightly said, a lot of farmers have bought, a lot of farmers caught out last year that held off waiting on price to drop and it increased. And then you know, it was no good thinking that you were going to get cheap fertilizer in April or May, whenever it should have been spread for the first cut in March. So look, there is a secure net there, I suppose, on some farms, but it's very hard to know. Look at the gas, I'm keeping track of it there nearly every day or every second day. It's still as volatile as ever. There's a lot of moving parts, but look at it could go up or down, but hopefully as the year progresses, things start to smoothen out and that the prices will come down. But for the short term, it's important to, I suppose, if farmers need grass in the springtime, we can make the best use of our slurry as possible, yes, and that should be done. But there's going to be have to some amount of chemical fertilizer that goes out to, I suppose, provide sufficient grass for the animals when they start grazing.
You mentioned, I suppose, using slurry and utilizing slurry to its best ability or whatever on a farm. But I suppose in relation to nutrient management planning, the net is tightening there a wee bit in terms of, you know, there's extra rules come in there for sort of farmers that are over a certain, we'll say, nitrogen, organic nitrogen on the farm is at 130 that have to have soil samples taken. Just run down through a few of those changes for our listeners and viewers in terms of what's changing or what has changed. Because I know I spoke to a number of farmers over the last number of weeks who got soil samples taken, and actually P is limiting them taking in slurry and pig slurry. Mm-hmm. Up our country, a lot of pig slurry moving, and some dairy farmers export slurry as well onto dry stock farms. And they've found that this year, because they've had soil samples taken and their soil samples are quite high, we'll say in P, that they're quite limited in terms of taking on slurry on those farms. So what has changed there in 2022, and what's changing for 2023?
Yeah, well, look, as you rightly said, there is a lot of the dry stock farmers that do take in slurry from your maybe intensive dairy farmers. Any farmer that was in a derogation couldn't import any organic manure onto the holding, so they were exporting, if anything, to the farmers that was below that 170 bracket. But look, there's a lot of changes happening in the new year, and that's probably going to be one of the challenges to understand them and implement them merely from day one, because the banding is one, so depending on what output, the average output per cow is in a farm, you have your cow going from 89 kilos of organic N now up to 106, say, for your higher producing herds. And look at the derogation, for a farm to seek a derogation, they were seeking to get more stock onto the land that they were declaring on a BPS. And there was always sort of a cap number on the amount of stock that you could take in, but the pressure now is that that average organic N figure for a particular, threshold of cows that are producing a certain amount of litres is increasing, and it's just putting more tension on the system whenever the limit is at the 250, and there's talk that might come down even further, because I know there's an interim review of the nitrous derogation in 2023, and I suppose if water quality doesn't improve, there could that ceiling could be coming down. But look, we have to do everything that we can to hold on to our derogation. I suppose some of the other regulations that's coming in is that for everyone that's farming above the 130, as you said, they need to have soil samples basically to show the department that they can take in P.
What if I didn't take soil samples in that case, in that scenario, am I staying under the radar then, or what happens if I don't take soil samples?
So that's one of the changes. So if you didn't have soil samples last year, say you were assumed index 3, so you're given a maintenance allowance for any land that you didn't have soil sample, but from this year that's moved to index 4. So for a farmer that was between the 130 and 170, wasn't in derogation, still farming the intensive enough, if they didn't have soil samples within 4 years, technically, if there was a ton or 2 ton or 4 ton of 18, 6, 12 taken onto the farm, that they have to prove that they can take it in. And if there's no soil samples, they can't prove it. They're assuming index 4 and they're in a bit of bother.
So you have to prove from here on, you have to prove that you need the P and the K. But I guess if your soil samples show that you need it, there's no issue then taking it in, but it's important that you don't go over your P allowance or whatever else.
Yeah, there's no issue. If once you need it, there's no issue with taking it in. But I suppose one point on that is that I think the journal had an article there recently about the NP and K application, say the total applications or total tonnage bought and applied in 2022. And I think going by my figures here, P sales was down about 26% and K sales, potash sales was down 24%. And David Wall, we had David Wall on our own podcast there earlier in the year. And he put it very, very simply with pea and the importance of pea in the springtime. He says, you have different pools of pea in the soil. And if you tapped into it or didn't spread pea, say last spring or last year, you tapped into that available pool. But that available pool isn't going to be available next spring. So if we took a break with pea, especially pea is very important. Pea is like the ignition in the car. You know, we can have the diesel, we can have all the moving parts there, but we need to turn on the ignition, and the pea turns on the ignition in the grass plant and the roots and activates that growth in the springtime. And it's very, very important because the calving has got so compact because of so much of demand now for spring grass. We need to get that pea out. If we can put it out, that is. So it's just very, very important. It's a mindset change. I know the prices are high, probably even higher than they were last spring. But we will get a response to pea. If the soil samples are showing up that it needs it, we will get the response. And it's very important to keep that in the back of our mind.
It's funny you should mention that because I spoke to a number of dry stock farmers. Look, dry stock farmers aren't huge users of artificial fertilizer, but on some farms, you know, higher stock farms, maybe they do spread, you know, a good bit of, we'll say, chemical fertilizer. But some of those maybe lower stock farms would have not spread a lot of fertilizer or a lot of P and K in 2022. They see no disadvantage to that in 2022 in terms of reduced fodder. You know, it was probably a good grass year on a lot of farms, especially in the Northwest. No issues with yields and pretty good quality silage came in as well. And they're sort of saying now that, geez, was I really overdoing this fertilizer thing, or did we really need that P and K? So you're saying that we've probably dipped a bit into the reserve there in 2022. To try that again in 2023 could be a risky strategy.
Well, there's two sides to that story, Adam. There's one side of the story is that there's probably an argument to be made in a lot of farms that they were using too much nitrogen and that maybe they were covering the cracks with poor P and poor Ks. Like the results show in the latest Chaga survey would show that, you know, it's not the soil fertility, national soil fertility results isn't getting better. They're actually getting worse.
Okay.
So, you know, we are depleting the soil fertility status of our soils. And you know, that is going to have its consequences in trying to reach that 12, that 14, that 16 ton of grass or whatever the aim for grass growth is in the farm. But then I suppose the whole conversation now around soil health has really gained momentum. And it's great to see because one thing that I think everyone has learned from maybe the droughts and I suppose them shortages or dry spells throughout the year is that whenever the rain does come, whether there was nitrogen put out or whether there wasn't nitrogen put out, that the grass will grow when the soil is warm and when it gets moisture. If there's no compaction, your bounce back will be reduced. But, you know, that's why, you know, I suppose the last six months and from now on, I don't really, at the start of the year, I don't really advise a farmer to spread that September application of nitrogen because everyone thinks that, oh, the temperature is going to be reducing and that, but it takes a long period of time and low air temperatures to cool the soil. And once that soil does get moisture in September, October, the heat is still in the soil and we do get a bounce. So we're starting to understand the soil a wee bit more. There's underpants tests going on and there's Solvita tests and there's earthworm counts being done and I suppose on the flip side of that, there's a lot of compaction out there as well. So it's the soil health.
So you're saying like there's a lot more to growing grass and to looking after soil than just lashing out the nitrogen. Basically, there's a lot more understanding, and you're saying that possibly 2022 high fertilizer prices has maybe focused the mind more on those other aspects of soil health.
Well, one thing that'll focus the minds is price, Adam, you know. But look, in one sense, it's been great. And that's the way policy is going. Like another one of the regulations this year is that the maximum chemical fertilizer rates that we're allowed to play is being reduced. So like, you know, if you're between the 170 and 210, you're allowed to spread a maximum of 254 kilos of chemical nitrogen. And that's reduced. If you're over the 210 of organic nitrogen, say that's reduced down to 224. So farmers are going to have to maintain or increase, whatever the case may be on the farm, their grass growth with less nitrogen. So, and it takes nitrogen to grow grass. But what we know from the work that we've done on grass and is that there's a huge supply of nitrogen in the soil. The trick is getting it out of it.
Just finally, Sean, we'll just have a chat around, I suppose, future policy and maybe, you know, a bit of uncertainty there around 2023 in terms of meeting emissions targets and sort of maybe we look at, there's talk about culling schemes, there's talk about reduction schemes. What are you seeing on the ground out there with, you know, your own customers as regards farmer mindset? Is there a different mindset on the dairy side of the house maybe than the beef side of the house? Or what are you seeing there on the ground?
What I'm sort of seeing, and I can't blame farmers to a certain extent, Adam, is just uncertainty. They don't really know what's coming at them because it's coming so quick. And, you know, it's coming so quick because the targets are drawn up, and signed, and we have to try and meet them. But I suppose where the uncertainty is coming from is that, you know, we know how we're going to get there. We've a sort of a half a roadmap or three quarters of a roadmap, and then there's certain technologies that haven't been actually created yet or invented yet or looked at yet that were relying on them new technologies to get us where we need to go. So you can't blame anyone for having a bit of uncertainty. But look, at I suppose every farmer has to look at their own system. I suppose leaders in the agricultural industry have to sort of step up to the plate, have to get educated on what's happening and have to be able to explain all the changes, no matter what industry or area or company that you're working with. If you're involved in agriculture, it should be your responsibility to sort of help farmers and advise them properly on how they're going to, I suppose, first of all, improve their economic performance. And there is an opportunity with using some of these new technologies to improve the economic performance, improve labor. Labor's another massive issue that, you know, it's sort of been an issue for the last couple of years, but I suppose as herd numbers have maybe increased and maybe the lower number of farmers, I suppose herd numbers have sort of remained static to a certain extent, but there's less and less farmers. So I suppose the farmers that are there have sort of got more intensive, more of a workload. Farmers are taking on more, they're investing more to improve their facilities and that. And that's putting a lot of pressure on the people that's working on farms. So look, and another challenge is, look at the pressure point in the new year is obviously going to be around calving. You know, make sure we're organized, make sure that there's holidays booked and all that sort of stuff, because if morale drops around calving, the small issues become big problems and we don't want that to happen.
Okay, David, look, that was a great rundown through what we can expect and as far as we can see for 2023. I know it was a tough one, especially in the fertilizer industry, above all industries, to look forward and see where we're going, because 2022, there was obviously huge change there. So thanks very much for joining us today, and no doubt we'll catch up soon in 2023.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
Thanks to Adam and indeed Sean McMahon for that little snippet. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching and thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Adam, Darren and Aidan. And thanks also to Sean McMahon for chatting to us on this show. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. Shout out once again to our supporters, Grassland Agro, for helping us to make this show happen. We'll be back again next week, which indeed is next year. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.